The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 142, and this week for our latest five matches episode, I am very pleased to be joined by returning guest, Jake, a.k.a. Oakgan. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
How you been doing in the middle of our current hell?
My life is basically unchanged. I still have to go to work 5 days a week, so...
Oh, that's great. What do you... I don't know. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. What do you do that's essential?
I'm in healthcare supply chain, so like I order supplies for clinics and hospitals and stuff.
Sounds essential.
Yeah, I feel like I could do it from home, but they disagree.
I mean, I kind of think everybody could do almost everything from home, except like I guess stock shelves and stuff. I mean, you should have heard like some of the stories I was hearing. Actually, I don't know if I should share this on the air because there's in the voice wrestling Slack. But like people who have jobs that were very, very non-essential, where the employers were trying to keep them on as long as they possibly could until like the fucking government shut down the states. And I'm just like, yeah, wow, capitalism is bad. Who knew?
Yeah, thankfully thankfully my job, the like office people have been encouraged to work from home, but it's not that way everywhere. So.
Yeah. I mean, my job had us working from like pretty much a week or two before New York officially shut things down. I mean, my boss was really not happy about the idea, but like she was staring down like a full on revolt basically.
Right.
With everybody like, we do not want to get on the subways anymore. Like we got to fix the work. And the original idea I think was going to be like some people would come like once a week, and that thankfully became nobody coming in because the government shut us all down. But
right.
Yeah. Who knows how long that'll last. But it's been a big change for me. But I had to take the positives with the negatives, I guess.
Right. But see, for me it's been surprisingly slow. Just because we can't actually get our hands on anything. So So it's actually been very boring at work, all things considered.
Yeah. I feel like my job is I'm kind of a little worried about them going under because they're a tiny nonprofit and they lost like I think $500,000 worth of revenue from our canceling our annual gala. So it's not great, But hopefully they pull through. You know, if I'm suddenly unemployed, I won't be surprised. But what can you do? It's the times you live in, I guess.
Yep.
Very positive start to the show. But Jake, I know you're a gamer, as they call them on the streets. Have you ever played the Yakuza series?
Yes, I've played all of them, actually. Except wow. for, like, the weird... They did, like, two, like, samurai-era ones on PS3. I've not played those, but other than those...
Wait, did you play the zombie one, even?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, I'd never touched this series before, because which, like, I don't know, people were shocked on Twitter, because it's like, how have you, of all people, not played this series?
Mm-hmm. It seems pretty up your alley.
Yeah, I just started Yakuza 0 this week, and I do feel very stupid for not playing these before, but, you know. I didn't have, I also wasn't sitting at home all the time before, so.
Right, right. Yeah.
But I don't know, it's very, maybe if someone had explained to me what these actually were, I think I probably would have played them much sooner. It's, I think the perception is that it's like Japan's answer to Grand Theft Auto or something, and I've never really been super into those games, but it's like nothing, it's nothing like that. I mean, it's just an RPG set in Japan, I mean, and it's like small area. So, yeah, I mean, it's very, but it's so much fun. I just got to Osaka. It's just so much fun.
Oh, okay. But, that's Zero, certainly, I would probably call it, if not the best one, one of the best ones. You certainly picked a good one to start with.
Yeah, it was on sale on PSN, like $20 or something. So if it still is, everybody listening should probably, I mean, if you're listening to Wrestling Omakase, I assume you like Japanese shit. So
right.
You'll probably
enjoy quite a bit of good stuff in the, I don't know if it's a Golden Week sale or they're just doing like a Japan favorites sale in the West or whatever they're calling it, but a lot of good things to choose from in there.
Yeah. But after this, I guess I'll play Kiwami and then maybe Kiwami 2. But then I don't know what to, maybe I think I might just skip right to 6 because 3, 4, 5, I guess, are just PS3 remasters. So I don't know.
4 is good. I would recommend 4.
Okay. I mean, the thing I really like about it is just being able to run around this fucking city and, like, both play Mahjong and, like, do all this fucking side shit, but then also, like, have all these wacky side quests. Like, you have to keep getting dolls out of a UFO catcher for this little girl. All of a sudden.
Yeah.
I did the TV producer one in Tokyo, which was, like, probably the funniest one.
The TV producer one.
So he runs
into... Is that Miracle Johnson? Is it that one?
No. So this he runs into this TV crew that's missing their producer, and they basically make him be the producer for like this like restaurant segment they're shooting. And you know, they keep asking him to get, like, they keep using TV lingo to tell him what he needs to get off this table, and he has to pick out what it is.
Right.
Really
okay.
Funny. It is really, yeah, it's really funny. The other one that was really funny was in Osaka, where Goro has to be like the girl's fake boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are good. The localizations are usually pretty good. Great time with Yakuza.
Yeah. So definitely recommend it. I guess that's all I've been doing. Yesterday was my birthday, and I spent probably 10 hours over playing Yakuza Zero.
Okay. So. Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's a very, very strange birthday. I'm very much a go out and do stuff like kind of thing. Like last year, we went to Round One in Long Island, which is like this Japanese arcade chain. And then like, you know, a year before that, I think we went to Atlantic City. So I don't know. I'm not used to sitting at home doing nothing. But
that's my bread and butter. So
yeah.
It's not been work aside, this has not been too crazy for me.
Yeah. But I've already lost. I've lost 3 trips this year already. So probably going to lose the 4th.
Yeah, same. So.
But, you know, what are you going to do? In the meantime, we have some old wrestling to talk about. Have you been keeping up with any of the Empty Arena stuff? Like, have you been into that?
Some stuff. Like I watch Dynamite. I've seen the odd episode of Raw or SmackDown just to see what that was all about, you know?
Nobody else has.
Yeah, I'm the only one tuning into the show these days.
I talked about this on the air before. I actually know friends of mine who actually I don't know if I talked about it on the air or not. I know friends of mine who do not watch wrestling, I've never heard of watching wrestling, who have been tuning into these Raws and SmackDowns because there's nothing else on and there's no other sports on. So it's crazy to me too. And I tell them, Dan, I can give you some actual good wrestling if you want. But no, he's been watching these shows, I guess, because they're just on and he's so used to watching sports and there's no sports. But like, the more Dans there are, the worse, because that's my friend's name, the worse that it is for WWE, because the moment any of the four major sports comes back,
they're immediately gone.
Again. Yeah. So that if there's like 500,000 of them, that means they've lost even more of the regular viewers than people think. And who the fuck knows if those people are coming back? So
there's no way they're coming back.
Yeah. I don't know.
The second I stopped watching WWE every week, it immediately never mattered to me ever again. And same thing with like when I stopped watching football, like I have no desire to ever go back.
Yeah. I mean, people's habits just change. I mean, you just get into new habits. So the moment you stop watching, I mean, the promotions that I'm going to be interested in are like, what happens with like New Japan, who like completely stopped all this. Like, do people come back to that? And I kind of think in my head that New Japan and even like on a lesser scale Ring of Honor, they might be set up really well, because it's like, they let people miss them all this time. And, they didn't just let people drift away on their own with this empty arena shit. So maybe when they come back, it'll feel like, oh my God, they're back. And a ton of people will come back. So.
Yeah. I think for a lot of for WWE, for example, for a lot of people, it's just like the weekly ritual, and like New Japan isn't that. I mean, they run every week, but it's not like they don't have, it's not like a time slot in prime time that everyone's tuning in for every week. So yeah. I they might be better set up that way with fans.
Yeah. And I wonder what they're doing with that new time slot they got on that satellite network. But maybe they're just airing old stuff, but it's interesting. I could check that because I have the network. So maybe I'll remember to do that. But yeah, it's a weird time, and like this empty arena. I don't know if you've seen any of the empty arena Puro. I feel like
I saw the Stardom one, and that's it. Really, like I don't follow many like Japanese indies, which are kind of the ones that have been running because they kind of have to. And I caught a little bit of Chaco Pro, but it's not like a regular thing for me.
The last few shows have been like, I don't know. They moved to the 2AW Square in Chiba. And the last three shows, I guess, were Big Japan, 2AW, and All Japan. And I just feel like they were a lot better than the previous empty arena shows that I saw. And I think the venue has a lot to do with it, because you see an empty Korakuen. First of all, that's just depressing as shit.
Yeah, I know what it looks like full. It certainly looks bad empty.
It just reminds you of how, and even Shinkiba like that too, when it's empty, it just like reminds you of, how we're in the middle of this fucking virus hell. But like this empty little warehouse, I mean, who fucking cares? It's a little warehouse, I mean, it's like, it doesn't feel like you're being like, confronted with that reality nonstop. And the sound they make travels a lot better. So like, all these Japanese wrestlers have figured out that the way to make up for the crowd is to scream and grunt even more than they normally do. And like, Daichi Hashimoto was born for this. He sits there fucking screaming in these arm bars. And, like, they really cover up a lot better for the lack of a crowd than they had in previous shows. So, yeah, I enjoyed those shows a lot more than I expected. I want to come on and recommend listeners check them out if they haven't seen them. And then DDT is coming back this weekend with, like, their weekly TV show. I know All Japan has another show on May 5th, so we'll see. I'm glad that they're running and there's newer stuff to watch. I still don't feel like they're, I guess, complete enough to do full omakase episodes on, Like, there's just not enough to talk about with them. So I'm going to keep this format going. And people really seem to love this five matches thing anyway, so.
It's a good format.
Yeah. It's the best thing I've ever come up with in 2 minutes of thought, probably. But, I mean, it's been so much easier to find guests for this than it ever was to find guests to talk about current stuff. I think listeners like it too. The listeners have been, I gotten some positive feedback. So we'll see. The one thing I want to tell people now, because people keep asking me on Twitter and especially in the Discord, is we are going to keep this going even after you know, quote, real wrestling with crowds comes back, whenever that is. I mean, I think I kind of, you know, the state of emergency is supposed to end in June now, it sounds like, in Japan, and they are kind of getting it under control, at least better than we are. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's some kind of wrestling with some kind of limited crowds in June or maybe July in Japan. So at that point, we might transition back to doing real shows. But the five matches thing will continue on in some form. I mean, I can tell people right now, it might be like a Patreon. Like, that's something I've been thinking about. So, because I've had the idea for a Patreon for a while, just to cover, like, do daily coverage of tournaments and stuff. But I had no idea what to put in between the tournaments. But now I have this idea. So, right.
Yeah.
You know, I might.
If you want to beg you to come on, you know, might as well give them a platform.
So it's like, yeah, like maybe, I mean, you know, I'm sure some people aren't going to be interested in paying $5 or whatever, but like, you know, to do a second episode a week, it is going to be a little like, you know,
yeah,
taxing. So yeah, I mean, like, that'll be the idea, is to do a five, you know, like a $5 a month Patreon, where we do at least one five matches episode every week, plus, you know, like bonus tournament coverage. Plus I might do like anime shit on there or something. You know, whatever the hell else I feel like. And that way I'll use that money to pay, you know, not just the guests on the Patreon, but also the guests on the main show. So that's basically my idea.
If I mean, Japanese streaming services and cable subscriptions are expensive. So
yeah,
got to pay for it somehow.
So we'll see how that goes. You know, when we get, that's something I might look to roll out whenever we get real shows back. And then I'll occasionally do a five matches episode still on the main feed. So it's like, here's what you can expect if you subscribe, that kind of thing. So we'll see. If anyone has feedback on that idea, I guess you can let me know on Twitter. It's at WrestleOmakase, or the Discords. Both links are in the description. So with that all out of the way, I guess we can get into our five matches for today. The first one is your first pick, which is T-Hawk versus Akira Tozawa from Dragon Gate on May 9th, 2014. This was the main event of the Korakuen Hall show and was a first round match in the King of Gate tournament. First of all, considering you upload this yourself as a private video, you must have really liked it at the time.
Yeah, I don't know why I had this uploaded to YouTube for the longest time, but I did, so it felt convenient to pick it for this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so I guess you don't. The answer is I don't know. It's been lost to time, I guess. Yeah. But yeah,
I was into Dragon Gate during this period. This was like the one time. It was like my number one promotion. It was probably like 2014, probably most of 2015, like the Ustream era for them. And I was buying and ripping and uploading all the shows at that point. So I think this is one of like three things that's managed to stay unlisted on my YouTube channel.
I wonder when the Ustream era ended. That's a good question. I feel like it did like 2016, right? Something like that.
I'm really bad. I can't remember what I did last week, much less a couple of years ago.
Well, that's fine. But I guess going to, besides the fact that you just had it uploaded, why did you pick this match? I guess either for me or just in general.
So like for this, I wanted to do like, I don't know, not like all time classics, you know, just stuff that would be easy to find and watch, not too long. Like, good to great, not five stars. Just very easily digestible, low stakes, no story you need to know in advance, type stuff.
Right,
and
that makes sense.
I just like this match has always stuck with me in a weird way. I like it.
This is a really interesting time for Dragon Gate. I mean, thinking about it before, as the guys are coming out, I couldn't remember who was in what unit at this point, which is interesting because this is definitely a time I was watching, you know, almost every show. But and like I can tell you who was in what unit in like 2003 Toriumon off the top of my head, but 2014, I guess it, by this time, it became a little bit of a blur for me thinking back at it. But yeah, the millennials were still a thing at this point, which, you know, I had to look that up and see when they were around. They were around from July 2013 to August 2015, which is honestly longer than what I would have guessed like 1 year.
That's probably about when I stopped. I think I watched like the millennials run and was like super into them, and then kind of stopped afterwards. I may have seen it through to the end of Jimmy's, but I don't really remember.
So you were a big Millennials fan.
Yes. Yeah. It's like someone like getting into this promotion for the first time. Like, here's a unit of people coming in. It was easy to like wrap my head around.
Now, while you were watching, were you aware of the fact that the fans in Japan were not big Millennials fans?
They're a Monster Express, certainly. They're not the fan favorites. Yeah, I get it, but that's fine. Yeah. I don't care.
I mean, look, I always thought that they should have gone all the way with the Millennials. They would sort of make them a little heelish, especially like the T-Hawk and Ada team, but they never went all the way with them as heels, and they always seemed like they were trying to get them over, you know, with the Japanese fans, and the fans never took to them. And if it was me booking, I would have loved to see them go full heel and like have two simultaneous heel units in Dragon Gate for the first time ever. Like going all the way back to, you know, it's like the first time since Toriyama, basically. Uh-huh. So that would have been really interesting, but they didn't do it. They just broke them up instead. Tozawa, of course, was in Monster Express, which is a, you know, a fan favorite unit that was around from 2013 to 2016. Look, it was Shingo. I think Shingo was the official leader probably, but it was really Tozawa's unit. Cause like the thing disbands the moment he goes to WWE, basically like a month before. So,
right.
I mean, he was like the heart and soul.
I mean, certainly the glue holding this together as far as fan favorites go. I mean, he's just, like, T-Hawk isn't over in this match, but like Tozawa is so over that it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a good pick, I think, for people who only know Tozawa as like, you know, stereotypical goofy Japanese man. Cause it's like, yeah, this guy used to be fucking awesome. I mean, he's still
the goofy guy in here, but like, I don't know. He's got like fire and heart in a way that he doesn't, that I've seen in WWE. Like, I don't watch all of his matches. Certainly. I'm not watching the 205 live G1 they're doing, but
occasionally people will be like, oh, so that was this awesome match. And I'll check it out and be like, I mean, it's good, but if you want to see an awesome Tozawa match, I can recommend you like 50 probably that are way better.
Right. It's like, not even like special ones. Just like, hey, this was fourth from the top in the middle of a tour at Korakuen.
Yeah. So T-Hawk gets a lot of boos. So that's something that was definitely noticeable. The announcer's point at the start, T-Hawk is one third of the Tribal Gate champions at this point with Ada and UT. I do remember that team. I remember they held the belt for a while.
Yeah, I want to say they won them at Dead or Alive, maybe?
Something like that.
2014?
Yeah, I think they held them for a long time. But yeah, and Tozawa was half of the Twin Gate champions with Shingo Takagi, and they would actually go on to lose the belts to Ada and T-Hawk in July of this year, like right after they lost to Triangle Gate, I think like a month after this. But yeah, the fans, you know, really love Tozawa. They really hate T-Hawk so much that when Tozawa just, like, he grabs these chairs and starts blatantly cheating, and the crowd's just like, yeah, get him!
Like, yeah, this match isn't very... I feel like when like, the critiques of, like, the Dragon Gate style, which I don't want to, like, litigate that or whatever, but this isn't... I don't know. This doesn't have lots of what people would call, like, no-selling or, like, excessive finisher kickouts or whatever, but, like, the closest thing you get to, like, the classic sort of Dragon Gate style is, you know, Yagi being a complete dunce, you know, for the sequence. I don't even know. Tozawa just says, like, hey, and, like, points at Flamita on the floor who's doing nothing, and then he goes to investigate for, like, 30 seconds, which I love that stuff. I know people hate it, but I love
it. It is kind of funny. It is kind of funny, yeah. Even though they don't like T-Hawk, though, they do love his chops. Because he like does a chop and then gets a giant like one more time in Japanese chant, and he, you know, does it again. So they liked one thing about T-Hawk, I guess.
It's impressive how little he does for most of this match too. I wrote down every move he performed in the first 12 minutes, and it is shoulder tackle, vertical suplex, chop, and pile driver, and that's it.
Yeah, well, he makes it work though. I mean, just like
do what you're good at. I mean, this is, they're kind of gearing up to push him, and that doesn't work or whatever. But you know, they're certainly highlighting his strengths here, which is making faces and chopping people really hard.
Yeah, and Tozawa's a great guy, a great opponent for him, because he just you know, sells his ass off for everything anyway. So, but yeah, so like at one point, the point where the match really like kicks in the high gear is when Tozawa has really had enough of T-Hawk shit and he just starts elbowing him in the face as hard as he can. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, when he starts no-selling the chops out the corner. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my overall thoughts on this match was it fucking ruled. There's, you know, there's two kinds of DG singles matches. I think there's like the crazy 15 to 18 minute sprint and the long 30 minute title match. And this is definitely, this was the former, and the former is almost always way better than the latter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's very few super long DG title matches I love. You know, it's not just, even though I used to watch Dragon Gate a ton, it was never, you know, those are always the matches that I feel like the Dragon Gate fans are like, well, we have to get through this, versus like the stuff they really loved. I mean, the only one I can remember having super, super high off the top of my head is this Naruki Doi versus Yamato Final Gate title match that I went like 4.5 on, and I remember everybody else on Earth thought I was insane and said the match was bad. So, I mean, I might have been alone on that one, but whatever. But yeah, this was like a 4.25 just nonstop action match that I really loved. Great pick here, Jake.
Yeah, this is one I'd recommend to any. Like, if you don't watch any of the matches we talk about today, you should probably check this one out.
Yeah. And not to bag on T-Hawk too much, but the way the crowd completely deflates immediately when he gets the win is pretty funny. And Dragon Gate fans are like the best at that, because I remember the entire Shingo Takagi opened the Dream Gate reign. Every time you pinned the guy, there was like literally no reaction. Like, these people do not want to see the people who are not their faves win. And they will not cheer. They will not clap. They just go fucking dead silent. And it's like one of my favorite like little reactions in all of wrestling. Just like, they're going crazy. And they're going, it's not like it to be a crowd that's like silent the entire fucking night. They're going mental for the match. Like, they're going crazy the entire finishing stretch. And the moment it goes 1, 2, 3, just nothing. This is great. Wait, I don't know. Any final thoughts on this one?
I think the Guy Fox mask look was funny in 2014, and it's very funny in 2020. So.
There you go. All right, so let's go to my first pick, which was Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow versus Rick and Scott Steiner from New Japan, June 26, 92. There is like no particular reason why I picked this match. You gave me your picks first, and you picked Vader, and I'd already been scrolling through Rick and Scott Steiner like New Japan matches because I thought like it would be fun to cover one of those. If we did like a WCW match last week that could have been in New Japan, that was basically a New Japan style tag against Sting and Luger. So I was like, well, let's do an actual New Japan Steiner tag. And then you said Vader, and I scrolled through and I was like, oh, Vader and Bam Bam. Like, I don't even remember this, but it must have been great. And it was, but it definitely wasn't up to the level of some of the Steiners, like true New Japan classics. But here's the comedy. I picked this for our show, and the Super J-Cast also picked it for their show next week. They say, having nothing to do with us picking it, Joel, to his credit, did produce a tweet with a fan asking for it in like early March or something. So it was complete coincidence as far as I could tell. So yes, this 18-year-old tag team match is going to, oh no, 28 year, what the hell am I talking about? 28-year-old tag team match is going to get a double dose of coverage this week on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network.
It's a big week for Vader, certainly.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that's mostly just because I thought it'd be fun and I didn't really remember it. And you know, I don't know if you'd say four all-time legends. I don't know if Rick Steiner really qualifies as a legend, but legendary tag team. Legendary tag team, at least. So
I think Rick Steiner's the best part of this match.
He's great. He is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly has a bad rap because like the late end, it's like the tail end of his like WCW run is so god awful. But yeah, 80s, early 90s, Rick Steiner. No complaints.
Yeah, he was awesome. I mean, we said the same thing last week about Luger, where like, you know, the end of his, all these WCW guys were just so awful in those last few years that you forget how awesome they were at one point.
I'll probably say the same thing about Sting in the next, you know, 25, 30 minutes or so. So,
yeah. So Vader and Bam Bam, they're the IWGP Tag Champions at this point. The Steiners are the WCW Tag Champions. This is only for the IWGP titles. The Steiners would lose the WCW Tag titles pretty much the moment they get back from Japan. on July 5th to the Miracle Violence Connection and be out of the company by November. Williams and Gordy would be out of the company by the end of 92 as well. So it was a lot of people coming from Japan and going back to Japan. It was a, like 92 WCW is a weird ass year. Only the IWGP titles are online here. I just said that already. But this is from the Nippon Budokan, with the main event being Riki Choshu retaining the IWGP title against Masa Chono. That's not a match I remember either. And then speaking of being out of the company, Vader would wrap up this run in July 92. He returned only for three more matches in his New Japan history after this. He faced Inoki on January 4th, 96, of course, which is a pretty famous match. And he made two more appearances in the WrestleLand. Do you remember WrestleLand, Jake, or is that before your time?
I have no idea what that is.
So it's like this. So in like the mid-aughts, New Japan did these two weird little offshoot brands. One of them was like, I think called, I think Lock Up. I could be getting that wrong because there's been so many fucking Japanese wrestling brands that are like sort of shooty. But I think it was called Lock Up, and that was like basically Riki Choshu being able to book whatever he wants, and he booked like this, you know, serious pro wrestling brand. And the other one was WrestleLand, which was like Hiroshi Tanahashi's sports entertainment e-brand, where they brought in all these wacky gimmicks and colorful characters. And for some reason, Vader made two appearances there in October and November 2006. But those are his last two New Japan appearances, which is quite weird. Bam Bam lasted through October 92, but never returned after that. And I think the Steiners would make appearances in New Japan, like all the way through their part of their WWE run, I believe. I think they were still going back. I should have looked that up before, and I'm going to check now because I'm curious. But yeah, I mean, it was very, you know, these are four guys that, like, two of them will be gone very soon. And then the other two, you know, were never what you call full timers, even though they did, you know, they were like super. The one thing about this match, and I talked about this on Twitter last night, like, you probably don't love anything, and I just mean the listener here, as much as new early 90s New Japan crowds love the fucking Steiner brothers.
Oh, God.
I mean,
like the crowd for this match going into it, it feels like, I'm trying to think of a comparison, but it definitely has like a, like an exhibition, kind of like a dream match feel, where like they don't seem to care who actually wins or what's going on. They just are really excited to watch these two teams wrestle. And that holds for the entire match.
Right. And I love that.
Were like kind like the long heat on Scott. I was a little like I could have used a couple more comebacks and cutoffs maybe, but like every single kick out they're there for, every near fall.
I mean, they're going, and anytime the Steiners do anything, they're going completely nuts, especially. I love before the match that Vader and Bam Bam like hit the ropes and like run around and then high five each other.
Right.
It's just so fucking funny. But yeah. Wow, Rick Steiner wrestled a lot in New Japan in the early 2000s.
Totally, that sounds brutal.
Yeah, I'm just checking. I'm checking how long this run lasted. And okay, so 92, they're here through November before they lose the tag titles because they win this match. Then they're back in 93 for a couple appearances, and that would have been right in the middle of their WWE run. They appear on January 4th, and they appear again on December 13th. I don't remember when they leave WWE. I think it's like towards the end of 93, right? Something like that. But yeah, and then they go back to New Japan and they're there a lot in 94. Yeah, basically the whole year in 94. And then the whole year again in 95. And I think they go back to WCW in 96. But they're still in New Japan a lot in 96. So there you go. So they're around a while. And they make another appearance in 97. And then they're gone until 2000, when Rick Steiner versus Randy Savage, Wrestling World 2000. Hell of a match. And then Rick Steiner's there a lot by himself in 2002, into 2003. So there you go. History of the Steiners. And they made one last appearance for... I remember this match, actually. Against Giant Bernard and Travis Tomko.
Tomko, whatever, right?
Yeah.
January 4th, 2000.
Yeah. There you go. That's the history of the Steiners. But yeah, the Steiners were so fucking over. And, you know, if you've never seen this New Japan run of theirs, I mean, like, you know, I'm probably going to pick some other matches of theirs for this thing, because it's like one of my favorite runs of all time. And, you know, there's like, there's that really famous match with Kensuke Sasaki and Hirose Hase that I'm sure people have seen, but like, it is like they were like just doing the most. Basically, I like they were the Young Bucks of the early 90s. It's the best way to put it. Like they were doing nothing but fucking. They were doing these incredible tag team spot fests that nobody else was doing, and the crowd's going nuts. So like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure some people are gonna really hate me for that comparison, but like, it's pretty much the same kind of thing, except unlike the Young Bucks, they were actually over in Japan. So there you go. But yeah,
Bam, back all those people you alienated.
Bam Bam. So he immediately hits an enziguri on Scott Steiner, which the crowd goes fucking crazy for. And then the Steiners come back after being tossed out of the ring by hitting a double clothesline at the top on both men. And then they do their trademark pose. And this crowd, you have never seen a group of people be more excited to watch Rick Steiner bark while running in a circle. They are so excited to watch this barking. But yeah, then we get like Vader beating up Scott. Rick comes back like this big power slam, this massive German suplex. That's awesome. And then there's a spot that I honestly can't tell. If this was a botch, they did such an amazing job covering for it that like
when Scott slips off the rope.
Yeah, Scott's at the top rope, but the guys just immediately call a whole new sequence that ends with like this Vader butt splash off a sunset flip. And if that was a botch, that was amazing because it's like they don't miss a fucking beat. And you know nowadays if they would just fucking repeat the damn spot because that's all that wrestlers need to know how to do now when there's a botch. But like that was amazing. If that and you could argue it even like plays into the match later. When Vader does the same fucking thing and tries a butt splash off a sunset flip and misses. So that's why I was kind of like, maybe it wasn't even a botch. But if it was a botch, it was amazing. Then we get the Vader and Bam Bam working over Scott for a while, which I wasn't really expecting this to break out into the Southern Tag formula, but it kind of works because the crowd is still behind Scott. But I agree with your critique that like they could have done a little bit more during this whole sequence.
Yeah, even just like one like real comeback, and even like when he finally gets the tag to Rick, Rick doesn't get much of like a hot tag. I really needed him to just run wild for a lot longer.
Yeah, that's fair too.
Like everything they do looks cool. Like they just should have done more things.
There's a pretty great spot where Scott tries one of his T-bone suplexes, and like Bam Bam just fucking falls on him. And I don't think I've ever seen that like kind of suplex be countered like that. So that was really cool. And then Scott almost kills Vader during the standing Frankensteiner, which was quite the fucking bump. Like right, dropped him right on his head. So, and then Rick gets the hot tag and he's like a brief house of fire, but he tries something off the top and gets caught by Bam Bam and dropped with this like nasty fucking hot shot. Do you notice? I feel like nobody does hot shots. Nobody does hot shots like this anymore, I feel like. Maybe it's just like nobody wants to get dropped on their neck on a fucking cable. But like, I feel like these hot shots in these early 90s matches, there was one last week, I think, in the Sting and Vader tag match, or the Sting and Luger tag match. And it's like, just no one does these anymore. It's very interesting. Or at least not like this. But yeah, and then we get like the finish, which maybe you could even argue takes it down a little bit, where like they do a visual pin to protect Bam Bam after the ref gets bumped. You know, he does this like flipping standing senton, which still looks crazy even today for that, you know, his size. And he counts his own pin, but then he kind of turns around and gets caught with an overhead belly to belly by Rick for the pin. So I didn't love the finish, but and the match isn't like, it's, you know, it's not some all time classic or anything, but I think it's still a really good match. I still want 4 stars on it. And it's just really fun to see these 4 guys in the ring together. I mean, these are not 4 guys that I think, you know, really ever face each other that often, unless I'm forgetting something obvious.
But I think like, I looked this up, and on opposite, they were never, like, in the same match again, I think, is what I saw.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's such a unique moment in history, basically. They all end up scattered all over wrestling after this, and it's like, just the fact that they got them all together to do this match was pretty crazy. So, you know, I think in a way it doesn't quite live up to maybe what you're expecting for these 4 names, but it's still an awesome match.
Yeah. Like as part of this, you know, little compilation we've built here, totally fine.
Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on the match? Hmm? Like you said, do you have any other thoughts on the match?
Not really. Yeah, the finish being kind of like fluky, you know, it does take it down for me. But you know, everything they did was cool. It's 4 guys, big guys, beating the shit out of each other.
I assume there was something where like Bam Bam didn't want a job or whatever the fuck, but
I respect it, you know.
Yeah, we need more people not wanting a job.
I'm not gonna tell them jobbing.
Everybody jobs too much now. Everybody's just like, yeah, ah, sure, I'll take that pen. It's like, come on, Kenny Omega with the fucking 3 minutes of offense for that geek, which made the internet go crazy. Kenny should go out there and tell this geek, eat my fucking V triggers like five in a row and get pinned. Like, let's get that kind of selfishness back in wrestling. But let's see. Well, your second pick, Ken Shamrock versus Sabu, TNA, July 24th, 2002. I'm quite certain I'd never seen this. This may surprise you, Jake. I was not ordering weekly TNA pay-per-views in 2002. I actually probably did order like one or two out of pure curiosity. And they were like $10, I think. So it's not like, you know, they were breaking the bank.
Yeah, I think Garrett will correct me, but I'm pretty sure they were $10.
Yeah. So like, you know, watching the show, you know, like ordering them was no big deal, but then you watched it and you were like, yeah, I don't really need to watch this every week. So I remember seeing like some AJ Styles, Jerry Lynn match. I think that one of them convinced me to buy it, you know, cause I was already like, you know, very much a smark at this point. And, you know, watching like, you know, this is like early in my Japanese wrestling viewing, and you know, I wasn't quite going to Ring of Honor yet, but I was about to start going to, I was going to like Jersey All Pro Wrestling at the time.
Okay. So, TNA. I think I was like aware of TNA when they're doing the weekly pay-per-view stuff, just cause I would watch Raw or something and they might have a commercial for it. But I don't think I actually saw any until probably Fox Sports.
Yeah.
So this whole era was foreign to me until a few years ago. I went back and I've seen all the weeklies at this point.
Wow.
And I think they're terrible, but they're like watchable up to a certain point.
They seem funny bad.
Probably until like after the first year, maybe like after like week 60 or so, they're like unwatchable. Yeah, they're not even funny bad at that point.
Is that like when sex is around?
I don't know, John.
Well, what happens?
Sex is around for forever. They just start using guys that are not interesting.
I see.
I don't know. Like if you want like a like David Young and like Disco Glenn Gilberti to get like a sustained, not top heel, but like wrestles in title matches push. Like that's.
I say
that's no fun.
Who the fuck's David? Who the fuck is David Young?
And some like NWA like wild side guy that other wrestling people like.
I literally have no idea who that is. That's kind of funny. But yeah, so basically, I just wanted to say I have no idea what's going on here. You know, I know that Shamrock is the champion. This is
so
apparently
I will say that I did. Commentary references sort of ongoing angles, and just out of curiosity, I looked those up. So I'll address those as we get to them.
Okay, but yeah, this is a submission versus ladder match, which I was like, "What the fuck does that mean?" And it's for the NWA World Title. I think they never explain what that means. I think it means you could win either by submission or by getting the belt off the top.
That is correct,
ladder, right?
Yes, okay. It's both men's specialty match, so no one is at a disadvantage here.
But you don't have to win with your specialty because at one point Shamrock goes for the belt. And at one point Sabu starts doing holds.
Sabu spends most of the match trying to like out grapple Ken Shamrock. I will say this for whoever laid it out though. He does keep trying that and repeatedly gets owned. So
that's true. Sabu gets like a so I was wondering like who the fuck is the babyface here because they both get booed coming out. So I'm like, the crowd just likes neither one of them. They both get like a fair amount of boos. Sabu comes out first. He gets booed a little bit. So I'm like, oh, I guess he's the heel. And then Shamrock comes out and also gets booed. And I'm like, so who the fuck is the babyface here?
That question I cannot answer. And I doubt Vince Russo can answer that either. So
the announcers. I'm going to talk a lot about the announcers because they're amazing in this match. You'll never guess who they spend the entire early portion of it talking about. Do you want to guess for me, Jake?
Not just the early, because they also sign off talking exclusively about Jeff Jarrett.
Yes. I mean, we'll get to that, I guess. But the early portion of the match, they spend the entire early portion talking about Jeff Jarrett.
Because he promised he'd be out. He promised he was leaving with a title tonight. Jeff Jarrett said he would show up and he would take the title.
Okay. But at this point, They keep talking about Jarrett, and the Shamrock is working over Sabu's leg. Very boring. And then we get breaking news from Goldilocks backstage. Security has left the building.
Yes, they're so fed up with what went down tonight, they've left the building.
What went down?
They said, screw it, I hope they kill each other. Okay, so in the weeks leading up to this, Jeff Jarrett has been going crazy and laying out everyone with chairs. And the week before this, he like laid out the whole security team with a chair. And then literally this pay-per-view opens with Jeff Jarrett swinging a chair at security guys. Like, that's the first thing that happens. And then...
By the way, he's a heel, right? Like, he's not some Austin babyface?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
So then there's like a big brawl backstage, and then Shamrock starts beating up security, and he throws them all, or like gets them to like gets them all in like the locker room, and then like bars the door. So they're all like trapped.
Okay.
That's the opening of the show.
Why? So why is security?
So they have now walked off the job because of unsafe working conditions.
Why is like why are random security guys like a major characters on this show?
Well, they would eventually have two competing security guard stables in TNA. So, red shirt and black shirt security.
What the fuck? I seriously have no idea what this is about. Is that around this time or is that much later?
It's probably like 20 weeks from now, maybe.
Why is security such a big fucking deal in this promotion? Who the fuck cares about security?
There were competing, like, GMs, like, owners, so they each had their own security enforcers.
Okay. And that has nothing to do with SEX, SEX, Sports Entertainment Extreme, right? Or did they have their own security enforcers?
I think SEX would have been around. Well, like, one would have been aligned with SEX, yeah.
I think. Do you want to explain SEX for the listeners? Because we've brought them up a few times already.
Sports Entertainment Extreme, you know, spell it out.
Explain SEX, Dave.
That's SEX.
Yeah. They're Vince Russo stable. Yes. And this is why Jeff Jarrett turned babyface, right? Because he refuses to join SEX.
I honestly don't remember.
I think that's right.
They've done this angle basically like half a dozen times. So the specifics, I don't know them, but I know that things happened.
Let's try to name every heel stable in TNA. I'm going to try to do it. SEX, that's definitely one.
Mm-hmm.
Team, I guess you could count. I'm saying like every overarching heel stable. So SEX, Planet Jarrett, right, which had like Team Canada. A bunch of other people. The Kings of Wrestling, who I guess were also part of Planet Jarrett or something. Let's keep going. And what was it? There was like the Christian Coalition, the Angle Alliance.
The Main Event Mafia.
The Main Event Mafia. I'm just trying to think if there's any between the Coalition Alliance and Main Event Mafia era. I don't think there was. Main Event Mafia, Immortal. Fortune, who was part of Immortal.
That's correct.
The Aces and Eights, which is finally the thing that got me to stop watching TNA. Because I did watch TNA like from the Fox Sports Net era all the way through the Russo shit. And like, which, because at least I've said this a million times on here, the Russo shit was at least like hilariously bad.
Like, yeah, Monday Night Wars, like through Aces and Eights, I think was pretty funny to watch week to week. I don't regret keeping up with that at all.
I was even talking about like before Monday Night Wars. Like,
oh,
the,
okay. That's like when I came back to TNA. But yeah, the
to the back era,
like 2008.
Yeah, like 2007, 2006, 2007, 2008. But yeah, the Monday Night Wars era, I kind of did start checking out, honestly. But like, Aces Age was like the final straw where I'm just like, okay, this is unwatchable. Like, I cannot deal with this anymore. So,
and then yeah. Like 8 more years of Main Event Bully Ray all over the world.
After Aces and Eights is where I don't really know what else, what other heel stables they were. I guess there was like a Dixie heel stable, right?
I stopped watching. I don't know.
But yeah, we'd have to get Garrett Kidney on here to tell us all about post Aces and Eights TNA heel stables. But yeah, the point is they really, really loved giant heel stables. They did this a million fucking times. So. There you go.
Dixieland.
I don't know where.
was the Dixieland. Dixie was the heel stable. Okay.
Dixieland. Oh my God, what a stupid company. I was at, I think I was at the New York City taping where she goes through the table or whatever, but I left before she went through the table because the taping was so boring and bad that we couldn't take it anymore. But yeah, the Manhattan Center taping. Anyway, by the way, do you know who the other announcers are with Mike Tenay and Don Callis?
It's Mike Tenay, Don West, and the third guy is Ed Ferrara, who was...
Oh, I said Don Callis, I'm sorry, which I also wrote down in my notes. Don West, obviously. Yeah, yeah. So Ed Ferrara is a fucking idiot. I mean, I don't know.
Also, during this, it's Ed Ferrara, and he's got dreadlocks.
Yeah, I mean, he's fucking terrible. The other Tenay and West are fun, but Ed Ferrara is fucking awful. I think he threatens to break someone's nose at some point. So, yeah, then I just have a note here. Some guy yells boring, and then Sabu goes for an armbar. Sabu going for the armbar is really funny. And then there's my favorite commentary part. So as they're doing this really boring mat wrestling, Mike Tenay goes, getting more work from the back. And then there's a long, awkward silence. Like really, really, really long. And finally, either Don West or Ed Farr, one of them just goes, well, what is it? it's like such a long,
yeah,
weird,
I would have waited until I finished receiving the message to interrupt. But yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm getting more work from the back. And then nothing. Just complete dead air.
Yeah, also around this time, a fan sitting in the front row with their back to the hard cam raises a sign to show that, and the sign says, Lindsay O'Banion gives fellatio for crack.
Who the fuck is that?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, is that a wrestler? Or is that just some random woman he knows? Oh, good question.
I assume it's, yeah, someone they think is watching at home.
Who is... So, okay. So he knows one of the 5,000 people that are ordering these weekly pay-per-views, and he decided to bring a sign about how she gives fellatio for crack. Like, it's so oddly specific. This isn't airing on network television, sir. Are you really that sure this woman's going to be watching on weekly pay-per-view?
There's a very good chance that she was not watching. you do bring up a good point.
But yeah, so there's a... Anyway, so the long awkward silence says, Ricky Steamboat will be here next week, and he will have full authority.
He'll be secure. Security has all quit. So they got Ricky Steamboat to replace all of them. Yeah,
that's what they lost. I mean, that at that point, I was like laughing really hard. So that was funny. But yeah, at this point, the match is really just Shamrock alternating between submissions and beating the shit out of Sabu to a dead crowd. I mean, yes, it is.
Sabu at one point goes for a pin, you know, realizes they aren't legal, slaps on an armbar, then says, fuck this. And then he starts getting weapons, and they do some brawl outside, and Shamrock throws Sabu into one of the caged go-go dancers.
I just put down lady cage. That's what it was, a lady cage.
Yeah.
Which I totally forgot. They had so again, if people don't know, they had fucking cages set up next to the stage with a woman dancer in them they would cut to. I'm just like, why are they in a cage? I don't understand. Are they fucking birds? Like, I don't understand. Like, what's going on here? Can't they just have dancers without making them fucking cage? I don't understand. Is that like a thing? I guess it's a thing in like clubs, right? Maybe that's why. But I don't know.
I was not going to strip clubs in 2003.
I'd never been to a strip club in my life, so I couldn't tell you. But yeah.
But yeah, then, you know, table set up on the outside. Sabu goes for a big dive, flip dive through it. Shamrock rolls out of the way. Eat shit.
That was great. And he was like bleeding. Oh, he was bleeding off the lady cage. And then like, you know, he does like the legit crazy ass bump to the table when Shamrock rolls out of the way. And we get the great call from Don West. Man, that guy really is suicidal, homicidal, or genocidal. I was like, I love Don West. I miss that man so much. But yeah, I mean, this stuff is cool. It's just like the first, I went back and actually checked the runtime, and I'm pretty sure it was 5 minutes, but it felt like 50. Like everything before they roll out of the ring.
It feels like the longest match we watch, but it's probably the shortest.
It's like 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's like, it feels like it's 100. I mean, especially all the stuff in the ring, it just felt fucking endless.
And I just kept looking. I mean, I went back and looked for real to make sure it was only 5 minutes before they rolled out of the ring. And I'm just like, how is that possible? Like, I kept double checking. I'm like, it can't be only 5 minutes from when they started to when they roll out of the ring for the brawl. But apparently it was. But yeah, all the stuff after that is kind of cool. And then Shamrock, he sets up the ladder and goes for the belt. But then, okay.
Then some mallet. Music hits.
No. You got to set this up correctly.
Yeah, this is.
Music hits. The lights go out. Okay? Now, Sabu himself used to do this all the time. You expect when the lights come back on, there will be a wrestler in the ring. The lights come back on. Ken Shamrock's still there with his hand on the belt. Could easily pull it down, by the way. And there's still no one in the ring.
It's like. The belt is like unhooked already too. It's like just sort of barely hanging on. If he took his hand off it, it might just fall off.
And there's no one in the ring. The lights came back on and there's nobody. Malice rolls in the ring. He just does a so the lights, the music plays, the lights go out, the lights come back on, no one's there, and then Malice does a normal run in. It's like what the fuck?
Oh, for the viewers, for the listeners, no, Malice is the Wall from WCW.
Yeah.
And then he finally gets in the ring and gives probably the worst choke slam of all time to Ken Shamrock, who does not get up at all. He just sort of takes a back bump off the ladder.
By the way, you've seen another choke slam that we're going to talk about in a second. I guess that one was better. I don't know. And then Malice. I don't know where the fuck Sabu is in all this, by the way. He just fucking
vanished. Then he takes the belt and leaves, and the announcers speak as if he has just won the title. And they're screaming about what is Jeff Jarrett going to do about this? Is the last line of the video.
I think it's what is Jeff Jarrett going to say about this, but either way. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, what is Jeff Jarrett going to say about this? I'm like, this could not be a more perfect encapsulation of TNA. I mean, people used to make fun of Kevin Nash and say he was Poochie, but Jeff Jarrett literally was Poochie. At all times, in total nonstop action, when Jeff Jarrett was not on the screen, the announcers are like, where's Jeff Jarrett? What is Jeff Jarrett going to say about this? And it's just it is not exaggeration. This entire match, they talk about Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
So
I would say it's like a brilliant sort of subversion of your expectations because you think, you know, Jeff Jarrett's going to come out at the end, but no, it was Malice of the new show.
So Jake, I'm sorry, but this match fucking sucked. some of it was funny, but the early portion, especially, just felt fucking endless. If I was going to rate it, I would give it I'm sorry.
I think it was agented well.
Agent too well. I would give it 1.5 stars. That is my official rating. A bad match, but look, a bad match that I'm sure entertained me more than like anything that airs on WWE television now. So
I watched like a 10-minute bad match like 4 times in a row before I watched like a 40-minute bad match. So
yeah,
and that's match was better than anything on WrestleMania this year.
I didn't watch WrestleMania. Was it that bad?
There was like 2 matches I thought were like actually good, and the rest was, you know, labored breathing in the empty performance center with matches that go too long.
Yeah. I don't know. I kept thinking about it, and I'm just like, I really have no desire to watch this. Why force myself to watch this just because it's called WrestleMania? I don't understand.
If the idea of the Boneyard match, I'm sure you've heard, you know, the elevator pitch for that. If that doesn't appeal to you, then don't even bother.
Yeah, I mean the mini movie shit. I mean, I could not have less interest in that by trying.
But like Edge Orton was like 37 minutes of brawling backstage.
Yeah,
unwatchable.
Unwatchable. I mean, doesn't that's the Benoit tribute spot match, right?
See, yes, I almost did Gargano Ciampa as one of my matches for this, but I did not want to watch a long match. So,
Jake, I appreciate your restraint. Thank you. I never want to see that match in my entire life. So if you're listening to this and you're on a future episode,
I'm going
to
make Chris
fucking pick that. If you fucking pick that, we're going to fucking fight. Okay. I'm going to fight you somewhere. Sometime, somewhere, we're going to fight. Do not make me watch that fucking match. Okay. Someone's definitely going to pick it now, but do not make me watch that fucking match. All right. My pick number 2, the Iron Man Heavy Metalweight Battle Royal from DET Ultimate Party, November 3rd, 2019. Now, first of all, I knew I was going to pick something from DET because you and I had a conversation a while back where we were like, we have very similar interests and like tastes in wrestling, except I love DDT and you don't watch it. And I don't remember if it's like you, I don't remember if you've like never watched it or just watched it a little bit but have no interest.
I catch it sometimes. So for like, I rarely catch up on stuff I don't catch live. And I don't like staying up until the wee hours of the morning to watch wrestling. So it's more just convenience. I don't watch it. Usually when I watch, I kind of enjoy it, right? Like I usually catch Peter Pan or like one of the bigger shows every year, and it's totally fine. I watch a lot more Tokyo Joshi Pro just because it, you know, comes on at like 10:30 p.m. my time if it's streaming.
Yeah. So do you watch? You watch New Japan now, don't you?
Like I'll stay up for like the Dome. Or like the G1 finals, or sometimes I'll make a point. So I'm going to watch the whole Best of the Super Juniors this year, and I'll catch that, you know, the morning after or whatever. But by and large, it's got to be live.
Okay, but yeah. So I don't know if you've seen this or not. I guess you can let me know. It was the third pre-show match from last November's Ultimate Party. One of my favorite Iron Man Battle Royals ever. I originally meant to pick the Peter Pan 2016 one, but for some reason so early on they were muting all the music on Universe. They stopped doing that, as you can hear in this match if you watched it on Universe. But like for some reason, like the Peter Pan one they uploaded is still muted, which takes away a lot of the comedy for the music. And I couldn't find the Samurai broadcast version anywhere. I tried really hard. This one is still a really, really good one though. It's just much more recent. But had you seen this already or no?
No, like I'd seen the Peter Pan one, right? But I'd not seen this one.
Okay. But yeah, so I guess, what'd you think?
So typically DDT comedy, the stuff that requires knowledge of like lore or Japanese or whatever totally falls flat, because I usually have to wait for like the DDT English guy to translate for me. But this is mostly like really obvious physical comedy. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably my favorite one of the last like few years, at least. I mean, they really went all out with this one. You know, it starts out with a chair winning the title, which is just great. And the song is just the entrance music gets is some guy singing chair, chair, chair in Japanese, which is awesome. Now, Hirota comes out. Were you aware that he sings his own theme song?
No.
Because the early days, so you couldn't tell apart his cover of Tokyo Go from the actual Tokyo Go.
Okay, so yeah, I know a couple people's names in this just because I don't watch DDT, but yeah, I was just like, just doing Magnum Tokyo. What's going on?
So he just loves the theme song. I don't know. He's not really. It's not. I mean, people think he's doing a Magnum Tokyo gimmick, but he's not doing anything else other than the dance. Really, he's just a goofball who loves Tokyo Go. I don't know.
Okay, well, I mean, whom among us does not love Tokyo Go?
Yeah, but I don't know. Could you tell that was his cover?
He totally stole Connor Braxton's gimmick. So,
but yeah, I was there when he debuted the cover of Tokyo Go. Because remember, like I said, early on in Universe, they were muting everything, and you know they went a long time with like, what are we going to do with Hirota when we're muting? Because he can't play Tokyo Go, but you know that's his whole gimmick basically. So they did all this wacky shit where like Shinshiro Takagi and Toru Washi did like an a cappella version of Tokyo Go, which is really fucking funny. But yes, they were like, you have to figure something else out. We need a permanent solution. So I'm at this show in Shinjuku Face, you know, and this is like my first day in Japan on that 2017 trip. And I'm incredibly jet lagged, very tired. But his music starts playing, the Tokyo Go music starts playing. And then we see a video on the video screen of Hirota in the studio singing. And his singing is somehow so fucking good. The entire fucking Shinjuku Face just like just starts dying with laughter. Like people cannot believe this fucking goofball is doing this good of a job covering the song. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's the comedy that he ends up doing a great cover. But everybody's expecting it to be fucking terrible. And the fact that it was great made it even funnier. So... And
he was easily the most engaging performer in this match, start to finish. Everything he did was funny.
Yeah, he's awesome. So he starts fighting with the chair. The chair takes Dragon Kid's Christo, which the announcers identify as such.
Is that like the satellite head scissors octopus stretch thing?
Yes, and he just chair does it.
Yeah,
and the announcers say it too, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with DDT, so I've seen a lot, but I haven't seen any of like the matches where the chair is a champion. So I didn't know if this was like a new spot or something, but this was cool as hell.
Yeah. And then out next is Yoshihiko, complete with the Undertaker music, which, thank God. And then the look Hirata gives into the camera when Yoshihiko is the next entrant after he'd been wrestling with a chair is really great. And I can tell you, by the way, so those things on the screen in katakana that I assume you can't read, maybe you can read katakana, you can.
Oh, no. Let me
know. Okay, so those are like stats?
Yes, that's a gimmick. There's like two kind of real ones and then like usually a joke at the end, right?
But Yoshihiko's are completely serious. He gets an 8 for technique, a 9 for power, and a 10 for stamina. So okay. There you go. I guess a 10 for stamina would make sense if you're,
I mean, he didn't get pinned. Did not pin or submit, so.
But yeah, after Hirata manages to power bomb Yoshihiko into the corner, the next entry is Pokotan, which had you seen Pokotan before?
I think I saw the debut of Pokotan, maybe. It's just like the dumb corporate mascot for DDT, but like as a joke, right?
Yeah.
Like it's all over the website when you're signing up for the streaming service. And all. So I have a question. Is Pokotan a tanuki or the giant balls like incidental to the?
No, he's supposed to be like a, a beaver, I think.
Okay. So he just also happens to have giant balls.
Yeah. Because he's produced by Don Chocodino, so he's
Well, that makes sense.
So Hirata is in such a state of distress over facing nothing but crazy things and mascots. He tries to I forget what he says in Japanese exactly, but it's something like, goodbye everybody. So, and he's like, he starts leaving. But Pokotan stops him for some reason, which I was like, why not let him eliminate himself, buddy? But sure. And then the next entrant, Shota from Gambare, comes out. I'm assuming you've not watched a lot of Gambare.
No.
Okay.
Like, I've seen more Mina Shirakawa matches than anyone else in this match.
But Shota comes out and Hirata yells out, yes, a human! So he's so happy that finally have another human. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
I said not for horny reasons.
Oh, not for horny reasons, sure.
Yeah.
And then the Dastardly Human Alliance first uses Yoshihiko to eliminate Pokotan with the big, spinning Rana. Then they turn on Yoshihiko and just fucking toss him out of the ring. I remember the first time I watched being, shocked by that, because Yoshihiko usually goes really far in these things,
He's got a 10 in stamina, 9 in power, or whatever.
Yeah, so it was a big upset. But yeah, then after that, Yuki Kamifuku comes in next. And she, at this point, remember, the chair's champion. It's just like that WrestleMania 2000 hardcore title match battle royale, if you've never seen one of these, where first of all, it's pins or over the top rope.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if the WrestleMania 2001 was or not, but this one is. And second of all, if you pin the champion,
title changes champion during a battle royal, not the end of the battle royal. Yeah.
And Yuki Kamifuku comes in next. She starts doing a sexy pose on the chair. And, if you've never seen Yuki Kamifuku, she's 5'8" and kind of like a dancer type, I guess. And, she starts doing this big leg pose on the chair and she pins the chair.
Accidentally.
The referee counts the pin. Now, first of all, I talked about this last time on the show when we covered this Ultimate Party originally last year. I don't think this was a legal pinfall. The chair was on its legs.
No, you're right.
Yeah. To be pinned, the chair should have been laying flat. So you really gotta take issue with that pinfall. Chair was robbed. But anyway, so she becomes the new champion. Then Sagat from Basara comes out. I'm assuming another promotion you're not a big viewer of.
Is this the Sandstorm guy?
Yes, I think so. No, not Sandstorm. Okay. This is the creepy face guy.
Oh, okay. Face paint, greasy hair, that guy?
Yeah, wants to touch a boob.
Yes.
But yeah, he's unable to attack either girl because of how cute they are. But he eventually does manage to get over it and backslide Kamiyu to become the new champion. And then Owashi comes out. He's a Sandstorm guy. I love Toru Owashi. I hope you love Toru Owashi too, because just the faces he makes, his general demeanor, the fact that he's used Sandstorm as his theme song since he was a serious monster hero in Toriumon 18 years ago. I love everything about Toru Washi.
Oh, yeah, no complaints here. Toru Washi, you know, Sagat, you know, does eventually successfully grab breasts, but they're his, and he doesn't seem to mind.
Yeah, he's really into it. That was really funny. But yeah, then everybody starts doing these leg holds, okay, and they form like this circle, which turns out to be the perfect stage for the final entrant, the reigning over 40 champion, gorgeous Matsuno, to start singing. And when Matsuno gets in the fucking middle, if you look really closely, I don't know if you saw this, when the camera's like, because the camera's not focused on him, but if you look at Awashi, he is making a face of like disgust and pain at this man about to sing. This man is about to sing, and it's so great. But yeah, he starts singing. Everybody immediately gets up and starts beating him up, but he keeps singing through the entire thing. Matsuno, he ends up pinning Sagat in a huge pile up, which makes him the new champion, as he continues to sing. And everyone ends up out except for Hirata Matsuno. He's singing the entire time. But this is the only thing where I don't know if you've got this joke. So Hirata, he normally has this one-shot KO chop where he, like, hits you with this chop to the neck.
And is it the one where he, like, followed through and posed and was shocked at that one?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So it doesn't work because Matsuno's singing is too strong. As long as he keeps singing, he's invincible, yeah. And so Matsuno, while singing, this goes on for a while. He, like, does this chop and, like, just repeatedly, so we get like a reverberating effect while he's singing, which is funny. But Hirata hits the ropes, runs in, and Matsuno, while singing, gives him a choke slam. And Antonio Honda on commentary thinks this is the greatest thing he's ever seen, where he yells, like, choke slam da! Choke slam da! She's like so excited by this choke slam. But the moment he stops singing and goes for the gorgeous superstar elbow, which is, of course, his version of Taiji Ishimori's finisher. He, like, does the fucking flip into the ropes and everything. And this man, by the way, is 58 years old, if you don't know. He just falls down, and Hirata pins him. I think that's the greatest ending to a professional wrestling match in history, honestly.
It's certainly so far in this episode.
But, yeah, well, I don't know. I guess final thoughts on this incredible match.
This is good. This is like a pre-show thing, right?
Yeah, it was the third and final pre-show
match. So, like, typically this is the stuff I wind up seeing on DDT. Like, I rarely see the more serious main event stuff. This is all I need from DDT right here.
It was great. I love this match. Who was your favorite performer, if you had to pick one? I think you said that already, right? I think you said Hirata.
Yeah, Hirata or whatever.
Yeah. So, did you see the post-match where the sponsor tried to roll him up but failed?
Yes, I did stick around for that.
That was great. But, there you go. DDT. Definitely worth watching if you haven't seen it. Even if you're not, even like Jake said, even if you're not normally a DDT viewer, I think you'll enjoy this.
I think this one's pretty easy to pick up what's happening. There's you've only really had to explain like two jokes to me. So,
yeah. So there you go. Now we can move on to the fan vote. You put up Sting and Vader from WCW. December 28th, 1992, the King of Cable finals, which hopefully you can explain to me what the fuck the King of Cable was, because I have no idea.
I kind of swooped into it.
It's a semi-main of Starrcade 92. The main event was the Battle Bowl. I put up Sabu versus the Sandman from November to Remember 97. Have you ever seen that match or no?
I have not.
So the voters chose this by a very slim 52-48 margin. Once you pick that Sabu match, it made me think of Sabu and Sandman, which is possibly the worst wrestling match of all time. I mean, it's very, very high up there. So I thought it would be funny to watch it with you and see what you thought if you haven't seen it. But like,
I might track it down when we're done here.
They go like 20 minutes and maybe one spot hits. Like every single thing they try is a complete failure. Like the ladders fall down, the tables break before they can break them. It's just an incredible comedy of errors. So, I mean, it's really, really incredibly awful. I remember at the time, even like reading stuff. Well, I don't remember at the time. I wasn't watching E7 in 1997. But like reading stuff about it afterwards, like, you know, going back and reading, like this was like a big dividing match in, I guess, internet wrestling fandom at the time, where like the people who loved ECW insisted it was good, and everybody else was like, what the fuck are you talking about? This was like fucking horrendous. So I thought it'd be funny to watch it with 2020 eyes. I might just force it on some other poor sap without putting it to fan vote on a future episode. So we'll see. But it did not. The voters wanted to see Sig and Vader by a very slim margin. I fall to 2-2 in these fan votes. But I guess why'd you pick this? And, you know, go ahead and introduce the match for us.
Well, I did the Everything Elite. They did like a Patreon thing on like War Games matches. I did one of those, and it was one of the 91, I think. Anyway, Sting. I love Sting now, and I wanted to see some more Sting.
Okay.
And this, and this was like under 20 minutes, you know, a fairly well regarded as far as I know match. So
now I will, is this your favorite Sting Invader match or no?
I'd seen the strap match before, but I'd not seen either of the two before it.
Strap match is better than this, I think.
I don't know
if you disagree with that.
I'll let you
disagree. Okay. But yeah, so Sting starts this out by hitting a very awkward-looking flip kick on Vader, and JR yells, "A great martial arts move by Sting."
Yes,
I thought that was funny.
So that's one that. So have you seen their first match?
I have. Yeah,
like kind of a squash, sort of.
That match I love too. So.
Okay, yeah, but this is like Sting sort of like pulls this out of his ass for the first time, kind of near the end of that one, and makes a comeback. So he goes right back to it at the start of this one. And immediately lays out Vader. Yeah.
See, now I feel like this match would be, I would like it better if I saw all the other ones in a row, probably, because I'm sure they build to each other. But, you know, not that I haven't seen them before. But, like, anyway, I'll get to my final thoughts on it. There's, like, this massive German suplex that looked awesome. And then there's, like, cactus clothesline that sends them both to the floor. That stuff is all really great. You know, he gets cut off by, like, he goes for, like, a stinger splash on the floor, which is pretty stupid, honestly, because, like, Vader's up against the steel fence, so your best case is you hit him with your body. The worst case is you crash into steel. You should probably not do the stinger splash on the floor. Doesn't seem like a good risk-reward ratio there. But, yeah, that's the transition for Vader to take over. And I don't know, maybe I'm just – it was very slow to me. That's my big critique, and I'm probably being a bit, I guess, iconoclastic here, because I think this is a really, really well-regarded match, but there was something about it where, like, the hype didn't connect with me on that. Like, being hyped up for it to a great degree and then actually watching it, it didn't connect with me on that level. It just felt very slow, mm-hmm. especially after I just saw Vader move a lot faster in that New Japan match.
Right,
so, I don't know. The beatdown segment, you know, just felt very, very slow.
The one thing that doesn't work about this match for me at all is, like, at the beginning, JR and Jesse are talking about, you know, what Sting's strategy going into this, and it was all about how he was going to rope-a-dope and outlast Vader, and instead he just, like, comes out of the gate swinging, actually, and then doesn't really do any kind of trying to outlast Vader at all.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly were going to do a quicker match here, but it doesn't really fit the story, I feel like.
And
like, the story is...
It's also shorter than their first match, too.
Yeah. I mean, the story is Vader is unstoppable or whatever, and it just feels like Sting... It feels like Sting already kind of figured him out beforehand, and then, you know, the beatdown that follows really isn't very interesting. And then the comeback... I mean, the finish feels, like, out of nowhere. Like, he just power slams Vader, come off the top rope, and pins him for the win. And, again, that... And from what I was led to believe was like kind of like a Sting conquering Vader moment. It doesn't really feel like he conquered. Mm-hmm. It feels like he just hit this move and beat him.
Yeah.
So I think they have another match. Oh God, not 93, but maybe 94 or something that I remember liking more than this. So maybe that'd be interesting to go back and compare.
I've watched what ones I can find. I'll check that one out.
It's like the real final match they have. I don't know if it's like at a, some pay-per-view Clash of Champions or something, but I don't know. Like this, I mean, it was a good match, but I definitely remember them having matches I liked a lot more, and you know, it was a little slow for me, and I wasn't really feeling it on like a 4+ level. So I would go like 3.5 on it or something, which I imagine is massively low compared to ratings. Because I looked up some other ratings and stuff, and it seems like mm-hmm. most people love this a lot more, but it didn't connect with me on that level. I don't know. What do you think?
I'd probably give it like four and a quarter if I was doing stars. I don't know. I like this a lot. This is more. I've also been on like a big Sting kick lately too. So,
yeah. I mean, I think they definitely had matches that I really, really loved, but I guess this wasn't one of them, or it just wasn't in the mood for it or something. But it didn't hit me on that level. But yeah, I guess that's pretty much it then for all five matches this week. Do you want to go ahead and give me some plugs, Jake?
I don't do anything. You know, I kind of just have a Twitter account at Oatgan. You know, if you like what you hear here, I really barely even talk wrestling on the timeline anymore. So you're not going to get it.
What is he going to talk about? I mean, at this point,
I rarely post. I'm all DMs now.
All DMs. In the meantime, of course, you can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase. Wrestling, of course, would not fit. That's the place you would go if you want to vote in the next fan poll. So again, if you really want to see Sabu and Sandman and you're mad, you know, your vote counts in our poll. I mean, every single poll, other than, I guess Chris beat me by a bigger margin. I think that was like 57-43 or something. But the other three polls are like 51-49, 52-48, 52-48. I mean, these polls have been super close. So unlike in many other elections, your vote matters. So definitely go to the Wrestle Omakase Twitter account. I got a snort laugh out of my girlfriend for that line, so thank you. One audience of one enjoyed it. But yes, Wrestle Omakase Twitter account. Vote in next week's poll. Next week, and the polls, by the way, go up Monday. So if you're listening to this, I record this Saturday. The episode will go up Saturday whenever Rich or Joe get to uploading it. And then, you know, I go through the next poll on Monday. The poll lasts for 2 days, so it ends by Wednesday. So yeah, if whenever you're listening to this, you have like until from Monday to Wednesday to vote. But yeah, so the next guest will be Joel Abraham from the Super J-Cast. You know, one of my goals with this is to have on a lot of other hosts on the Voice of Wrestling Network. And we've already done Joe from the Flagship. So now we're doing Joel from Super J-Cast. We have Liam from Wednesday War Games lined up already. And I've been, you know, I'm going to try to get probably someone from at least every show. So we'll see. But yeah, so that's next week, me and Joel. We'll see what matches we pick. And like I said, don't forget to tune in and vote for the poll. We have two Discord links in the profile or in the episode description, I mean. You can also donate to Wrestle Omakase, which we very much appreciate. That link is in the description as well. And folks, thank you as always for listening. We greatly appreciate it, and we'll see you next week.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.